So when it comes to talking about the narrative and bringing it out there, he's amazing. The one flaw I think Spike Lee has in terms of trying to shoot an action sequence, he can't do it. If you look at the second half of The Five Bloods, it's like, meh.
I really, really wanted to love it a lot more than I did. But that said, the cast, as you've already said, is amazing.
I really enjoyed it. I think 2.5 hours, it did seem a bit stretched for me for that.
The impact that he left with it, and that's what he seems to do every single time. And that was the magic of Chadwick. I mean, I think some of us will never forget him and his work. It's timeless.
Hey everybody, welcome to this episode of Flitch Watch Podcast. Today I'm joined by Ashanti Omkar.
Hello, Kobe.
Akin.
Hello, hi there. Thanks for having us on today's episode.
And Helen.
Hello.
And we're going to be talking about the latest Spike Lee joint, Da Five Bloods.
Thank you as always to the mighty people for the mighty, mighty tunes. And thanks to Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills.
Please do remember to write a review and rate us on Apple Podcasts and anywhere you can do where you listen to the podcast, because it really does help us.
And you can join in the conversation with us on Twitter
at FlixWatcherPod and on Instagram
at FlixWatcher. Hello, film fans. Joining us remotely today, we have Akeem and Ashanti Omkar. Please, can you introduce yourselves, tell our lovely listeners who you are and what you do?
Hi, everyone. I'm Ashanti Omkar. I'm a BBC broadcaster and a film critic. And I'm super excited to be with you because I'm pretty much one of those addicts of Netflix. So I'm in the right place.
You are in the right place. And who are you, sir?
Okay, my name's Akin, and I host a podcast called the Swinging Palm Trees Podcast, where I introduce people's quotes and their sayings and how it makes an impact on their lives. And I love film and popular culture, and my favorite genre is zombies, but that's just me.
Ooh. I think Helen's a bit of a... We've not had a zombie film on here, have we?
We haven't, no. Netflix is kind of light on zombies.
Well, we've had Zombieland. That was a choice that someone could have taken. And zombie films are coming out as we record very shortly. But I'm sure there's at least one zombie film on Netflix.
The Army of the Dead.
There are a few on Netflix. Yeah. So we should talk afterwards. But yes, anything zombies? Yeah, I'm your man. No, I think there is Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead is on Netflix.
Yeah, Shaun of the Dead. We've done Shaun of the Dead. So there is.
And Army of the Dead is the new one. So that's going to be all over all of Netflix, everywhere.
So we're talking today about The Five Bloods, which is not a zombie film. It's your choice, Akin. Can you tell us why you chose it? And I will then give you 60 seconds to give a synopsis. Starting now.
Okay, The Five Bloods. The story is about a group of Army veterans, African-American veterans, in their late years, coming back to Vietnam to repatriate the body of a fallen comrade and also retrieve some gold.
Nice. And why did you choose it?
To be honest, I think it's about goddamn time that there's a film that talks about the African-American experience, point of view in the Vietnam War. There are different films which do showcase it, but many films in the past have always whitewashed the Vietnam War. The very first one could have been John Wayne's The Green Berets. I remember watching that years ago in Nigeria, and I thought to myself, yeah, I think there's much more to it than just John Wayne. And then I grew up watching Rambo with My First Blood, Part 2, and then Chuck Norris with Missing in Action, where they always went in and they demonized the Vietnamese character. It was always the white man going in as the hero. And I thought, no, it isn't. And then you had Oliver Stone's Platoon come out, which showed somewhat of the grunts experience with different ethnicities or different groups, as it were. And then you moved over to Hamburger Hill, which shows the soldiers, everybody, be it American, American Japanese, white American, African American, fighting against the common enemy. And then we had the Hughes brothers with Dead Presidents, where you saw the film, just slightly, the comradeship between veterans of the war and how they transfer their skills into the real world in a in an armed heist. But with The Five Bloods, it talks about many things, but addresses one thing that I'm very interested in, which is mental health. And mental health amongst people who have suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, especially veterans coming back from the war. And I found it interesting how you have that issue being addressed, and also other issues, not just the mental side of things, but also of children who were born out of wedlock in Vietnam at the time, and how they had their own identity. Then you also have building up of fallen, we're looking at the enemy isn't demonized, just seen as the other, because you also see from their point of view, whereby...
Well, they call it the American War.
Yeah, exactly. They call it the American War, because before that you had the French try to colonize Vietnam, and they did to a degree. It was called Viet Minh.
So, I mean, this is a Spike Lee lens on the war and on the effort there, and this is the kind of thing you'd expect from Spike, from his authorship, I guess. And he has it from the start. He layers in lots of pieces. He layers in Muhammad Ali talking about why he's not going to the war. He layers in, you see Kim Ki-duk, the guy who's on the flames on the range against Machine. You actually see the footage that you see someone getting shot in the street, and that's actually real and visceral and gross. But this is recent Spike Lee showing exactly what is going on there. It sets a tone. He says there's no whitewashing, there's no hiding behind the curtain here. And this is a very kind of visceral and violent film.
It is.
Well, it gets to it later on in the... I wasn't surprised, but I wasn't expecting that. I mean, Ashanti, what were your thoughts on The Five Bloods as an intro?
I've got to say, first of all, I was so blown away by the casting. Like, I love Spike Lee's work, but with this, the casting just had come together. And I'd always... I mean, obviously, Chadwick Boseman, for those who know me very well, I've seen The Black Panther 5 times, all times at the cinema, you know, just absolutely love the film.
Oh, wow.
Chadwick Boseman, I then went and watched all of his other films, absolutely adored him. So I was really delighted that he was in this film. And then there was Delroy Lindo. And again, I'd been watching The Good Fight, completely, you know, mesmerized by this man. He grew up near where we live, actually. And I just thought, wow, Spike Lee has actually got these guys together into one film. And then I actually asked Akin about this war, because it's not a war that I know very much about. And I'm not huge on kind of the back history of wars and all of these things, but Akin is. So I kind of got a little bit of back history and then just went into watching it. It was during awards season, and it was a kind of press preview that they had. Watched the film, blown away by how that whole landscape came together, how realistic it all felt. And just generally, my only critique of it really is the fact that we didn't get much of a picture of Vietnamese life and the people of Vietnam. So we saw them as just these 4 or 5 different types, you know, the one woman who was in love with one of the guys who came down, one person who was, you know, I don't know, in a market or something, you know. So we didn't really get to see their side of the story very much, but I still liked how Spike Lee did this, and he brought the American perspective really well into the film.
Helen, what are your thoughts on, I guess, Spike Lee in general and the Five Bloods?
I'm a pretty big Spike Lee fan. This is what his... So this third Spike Lee film we've reviewed on Netflix.
So we've had Black Klansman and Inside Man so far.
So the anticipation of this, and obviously being kind of a straight to Netflix kind of one, was pretty high. And I think I'm probably going to be a little bit more mixed than you all. There's stuff that I really liked. I think the kind of first half of the film is like a really, really strong opener. And then when they kind of get into the jungle, that's where it kind of falls down for me, because I found it really fascinating about this kind of group of friends who had obviously had this really intense experience together in Vietnam and, you know, lost someone very close to them, and, you know, their experiences there, for them to kind of come back to Vietnam on kind of this mission and sort of see it through today's eyes. I was just really fascinated and like really enjoyed being with them and kind of like feeling like I was almost part of their gang. But then there was some kind of like bits in the jungle that were a bit weird, and they sort of, so they go back to rescue the gold, and kind of like a Three Kingsy style mission. And I'm not sure, I think when they kind of like get to that gold, and it lost me a little bit, and it's quite long. It's over 2.5 hours, and I don't know, it just didn't have the same impact of like Black Klansman did, with kind of like the real, like, whoa, this is like really intense. So I really, really wanted to love it a lot more than I did. But that said, the cast, as you've already said, is amazing. And yeah, Delroy Lindo was robbed, probably.
He was. Like, yeah. He was robbed.
I mean, it's... So there's lots I really like, but there's also some things that I don't know. I think when you have someone like Spike Lee, the expectation is always going to be like so, so high when you go into it. And then anything that doesn't like come out, like blow you away, you're always going to be a little bit like, oh, well, I'm a bit disappointed. That's me. So maybe I should just get back down in my box and just be grateful that we've just got something from Spike Lee.
No, I think I prefer the first half of when they kind of get back together. I'm a big sucker for camaraderie and seeing on screen and in films. And, you know, you see as I went up Junior, the first shot of him, and then they got the reverse shot of his friend that he hasn't seen in a while, presumably the rich guy that we found out is not rich in later on in the film. And just how they greet each other, and suddenly Clark Peters and Daryl Linda turn up. And I just love that kind of effervescence on the screen when people are meeting each other. And that drives a lot of my fun and, you know, choice of movies, that kind of camaraderie. But it does kind of go on a different, like Helen said, it goes on a different kind of angle and tack later on. But generally, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I think 2.5 hours, it did seem a bit stretched for me for that. But the portrayal of these guys was strong. I wasn't expecting so many twists and turns. Like the almost like A-Team face-off at the end was unexpected. The landmines going off was unexpected.
Yeah.
One thing that threw me, actually, having seen Black Klansman, was that those landmine clearing guys, two of them were in the KKK in Black Klansman. So that really kind of threw me. It's like, on second watching, it's like, those guys were the bad guys in the other film by Spike Lee. What does that mean for these guys in this film? Let's just play out. But that's really kind of interesting, I thought. Always love Isaiah Whitlock Jr. and Clark Peters as a huge fan of The Wire. So anytime they're on screen, it's an absolute pleasure. But again, going back to the camaraderie, even though it doesn't really play off in the rest of the film, that scene where they're dancing through the club, almost like Soul Train, that still has me laughing my ass off. And, you know, you know the love was there when that was happening, that scene was being shot. It's absolutely fantastic. Where are you guys on Spike Lee in general? Ashanti?
I really like the way he thinks. I like the way he's really vibrant in what he brings out. So somehow he manages to get everybody who acts for him to bring the character sketch to such vivid on-screen presence, which I think is absolutely brilliant. And yeah, I've got to say, I'm a fan, and Akin is too.
I think with Spike Lee, he's a he can be an acquired taste depending on what you're watching. Mm. Sometimes he does go off on one. He likes to get on his soapbox and make sure that you know exactly where he's coming from. He puts his finger on your chest and says, damn it, this is what I'm telling you, and you're going to listen to what I have to say. And on the other side to that, he can make a very fantastic storytelling in like a film like Inside Man, where it was far removed from what I'm normally used to seeing from a Spike Lee joint. So when it comes to talking about the narrative and bringing it out there, he's amazing. The one flaw I think Spike Lee has in terms of trying to shoot an action sequence, he can't do it. If you look at the second half of The Five Bloods, it's like, meh. He kind of fast forward a bit. The same also with his other film, his first ever attempt at a military film, which was Miracle of Santa Ana, back in 2008, I think, or 2003, I forget, which was a critical bomb, so and financial bomb. But apart from that, all his other stuff, Do the Right Thing, Coughlin, what's it called, Chirac, the list goes on. Yeah, so all in all, he may be an acquired taste, but I still like Spike Lee.
So this was, did you guys see this before or after Chadwick passed away for the first time?
Before. So we didn't really know it was one of his last roles when we saw it. And yeah, I mean, what can I say? Ma Rainey's Black Bottom obviously was his last. That's on Netflix as well. But I don't know. I still haven't gotten over his passing, honestly. And just seeing what he put into these roles. In this film, for example, it's a very small role, but the impact that he left with it, and that's what he seems to do every single time. And that was the magic of Chadwick. I mean, I think some of us will never forget him and his work. It's timeless.
Akeem?
Chadwick Boseman, watching this film, I looked at him and I just thought, how much talent can this guy have? This was prior to us knowing he was about to die with cancer and everything. And the way how he just conducted himself, I looked and I thought, I hate this guy. I really hate this guy because he's so good at what he does. And not long afterwards, we heard that he passed away. And what I found inspiring was that he was going through a really bad illness. And yet you couldn't tell. Nobody could have taught nobody. And this wasn't just with this film. This had been going back years prior. So if you look at Civil War, he already had the cancer at the time. Then also the Endgame and all the other Avengers.
Marvel films.
It's like, wow, this guy. So looking at Chadwick Boseman, I mean, it's left a lasting impression, especially in the film, because he brings about such a huge gravitas to it, especially that final scene with him and Delroy Lindo's character. I just thought, I'm going to hold the tears back. I'm going to hold it back. That was really powerful stuff.
All the feels. I mean,
the scene where we find out that Delroy accidentally caused his death in service. And I think that's you talked about PTSD at the start, and Delroy's character Paul is suffering the most from that. It seemed like, at least, explicitly.
Yes.
And he sees he sees Stormy Norman's ghosts, and the weight that this must hang over him and his whole life is there to see, with his relationship with his son, with his eagerness to support Trump. That's the kind of character piece that drives me. But I think, like you say, with the action beats, still didn't really... It went from 0 to 120 miles per hour. Like the landmine scenes was like, fucking hell, where's this come from, mate?
Yes.
I don't know, Helen, what do you think of that?
I was kind of like, okay, oh yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, yep, that's... I laughed. I'm sorry, I don't know if it was unintentional or not, but I did... Laugh.
I think it was almost comedic the way it came out of nowhere.
Are you talking about the landmine scene?
Yeah. I think I was just going to say, it's so bizarre that they've kind of come this far and they've managed to get there, and then one tiny mistake and it's kind of all over.
It kind of reminds me of that scene from Tropic Thunder where Steve Coogan's director character walks on the mine and goes, oh, and kablamo. I shouldn't laugh.
It's one of those things. Because you were saying earlier, Akeem, about that you basically sound like you have watched all of the kind of Vietnam films and have a pretty intense knowledge. Whereas I probably say that I've got kind of a good knowledge, but compared to what you were saying earlier, I'm barely dipping my toe in the water. So in kind of rankings, where would you kind of pitch this, and what is kind of top tier? And
an additional question is that, would you class this as a war film based on the fact the timeline is post-war, most of it anyway, but we do see actually action.
I would say it's in two halves. On the one hand, you've got a drama, and the other half is a shootout scene, which I wouldn't even classify within war. So I wouldn't call it a war drama because it has flashbacks, which doesn't necessarily warrant a real war story. It works as part of the narrative, but not necessarily as a war drama. So in terms of ranking, there's so many films, but if I were to look at it in the past 20 years, no, 30 years, I'd put it as a war film just beneath the top. No, I'll put it down to 11, number 11. As a war film. As a drama, it's good. But as a war film...
What would be your number one
war film? My number one war film from the Vietnam War era would have to be Hamburger Hill.
Okay.
Amazing film.
I've still never seen that.
Highly
recommended. Hamburger Hill.
I was going for Stanley Kubrick's It's Escaped Me.
Full Metal Jacket.
There we go. As a film. I'm not a big war film guy, but there's something about that film that really kind of pulls me in. I've tried to watch Ken Burns' Vietnam documentary, which was on Netflix like a year ago. And it's, you know, it's a good 20-hour deep, deep, deep dive into how Vietnam started and everything. And none of it's good.
No, I've actually watched that documentary.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating documentary, but the whole kind of why did this war happen? At the end, it's like, you shouldn't have.
Can I also add that what I find more insightful about the Vietnam War is that the lack of recognition that American troopers had who went to Vietnam War as ethnic groups. During the First World War, they wouldn't even allow black soldiers to fight in the regular army. As a matter of fact, many of the black American soldiers had to go to France and deployed with the French troops. Then during the Second World War, they had a segregated army. Now of course, you had the Korean War, but not many people talk about the Korean War. So let's jump over to the Vietnam War, where you had the draft service called in. And many of the people that went into the Vietnam War were 19. Their average age was 19. And they go in, and many of them were from different backgrounds, but you also had many of the African Americans who were fighting a war on two fronts. You got the war at home, where you had the height of the civil unrest or civil rights. Civil unrest is the wrong word to use, civil rights. And then they go into the war. That's why I had Muhammad Ali in that clip saying that no Vietnamese ever called me a nigger. And even you had in the film was depicted by Hanoi Hanna, the propagandist, who would say that, why are you coming over here to fight and kill us? You and I, we can be siblings. The real enemy's back home. So when I see films like this, it brings about what's actually happening to the reality of things. The social issues are addressed.
And this is why it's Spike Lee's, you know, thumbprint all over it. And I can imagine the script didn't have I don't know who wrote the script, but Spike Lee was like, okay, let's have these inserts. Like I said, the Muhammad Ali section, the setting the backdrop for the unrest in the States and in Vietnam. That's the kind of thing that he put front and center of, like Black Klansman, for example, which I'm sure he was happy to pull those cards out of the deck again for this, and does heavily, heavily, heavily set the tone for this film. So it's not a laugh fest, but it's, you know, the driving force is the camaraderie between the four guys, five, including Paul's son. And it's good to see the small kind of screen time they do share with Chadwick. And going back to Chadwick as a performer, I think it's almost befitting. There's very few other people. It could be that Stormy Norman is played by Chadwick, who's super well regarded as almost like a regal character. And every time he's portrayed back in the film, he's viewed with reverence, and you can understand why Paul has nightmares as sees ghosts about his loss, because he's such a charismatic person, and that's what we've lost on the screen, and that's what we've lost in real life. And it hits hard a few times. It hits hard when you take a minute to think, oh shit, he hadn't even started. Mm. He hadn't even started his career.
It's true.
Is there anything else, guys, want to say before we head to the scores?
I had something I kind of wanted to ask everyone what they thought about the romance, the love interest,
the French girl. Or do you mean Clark Peters?
Yeah, Peters, lady who I couldn't quite get the aging right. So I was trying to work out how old she would have been in the '70s and how old she was then. And is that his daughter? I was just a bit, because there's no aging going on the faces, so I was very confused. So I was just kind of wanted to see how everyone else felt that kind of fitted, and whether they kind of were like, yeah, I'm on board with this, or whether it was kind of like, not sure.
Wasn't it quite clear that it was his daughter?
Yeah.
I was under no illusion.
We knew it was his daughter for sure. But you're right about the aging, because they did a lot of de-aging with the characters, and going backwards and forwards with the narrative did probably confuse you when you were watching it.
I actually thought it was believable. I mean, if you saw the average age was about 19, 20, 21. So you have a young GI at that age, goes overseas, makes out with a young lady who could have been about maybe 17 or 18. So if you look at 1975, my math is terrible, so forgive me, up until 45. So add 45 plus the other 15 in question. It's possible. It is possible. I mean, with the black guys, black don't crack. I ain't saying more.
And they had good de-aging techniques.
That was at the final scene. It was okay. the final scene that had the de-aging scene. Fair enough. Mm. You know, because Delroy Lindo's character, I think he's now 72 years old.
Whoa.
Yeah, so...
Wow.
Yeah.
He doesn't look 72.
Exactly. So, and with the...
And you could tell that those guys were doing the physical stuff there as well. They were going through the jungle. You know, they dove onto the ground when the firecrackers hit at the start of the... You know, they were involved in it.
Yeah.
So I thought fair play to them. Well, what do you think, Helen? Were you a bit put off by the love story there?
Yeah. I don't know. I just found... I think, again, it took me away from, like, the guys being together, which was, like, the thing that I really liked. But then I guess it kind of worked as a plot bit as well. I don't know. But then I was just confused with the ages.
I think it was a plot device. And, you know, this was one of those films that was put forward for the award season, etc. So there are lots of things that are almost check boxes. Do we have enough romantic angle? Do we have enough action scene? Do we have enough great dialogue? And I think part of that also would have been to bring in that sort of character to showcase a female in Vietnam and to the love story. I mean, everyone loves a love story, don't they?
I think it also brings about something more important. Like I mentioned earlier, many GIs had children who were born out of wedlock.
Yeah.
So it shows an avenue to show that, look, kids who were left behind have grown up. They're young kids. I mean, during the Second World War, you had so many kids born out of wedlock to the Allied forces, and they couldn't make their way back to where their parents were. So I think in that respect, I think it was important that Spike Lee demonstrated that and showed that, look, kids were born over there at the time who never made it back to meet their parents.
And I also enjoyed the fact that I can't remember her character's name. She became the kind of main connect. She became the main fixer. And she was also looking out for Clark Peters, like, you know, I don't know these guys, but here's a gun. Just be careful. That kind of thing. So she did have her own kind of agency, and she wasn't just a wallflower. So I think that part of it was an interesting tale to tell as well. But let's head to the scores.
Hello, folks. I'm Sam.
And I'm Martin.
And every week for the last 5 years, we've got together to talk about the musician Tom Waits.
He's a gravelly voice singer that sounded like he doused his vocal cords in bourbon and set fire to them with a cigarette and wrote such classic songs as Way Down in the Hole, Downtown Train, Jersey Girl.
He's also the gravelly-voiced actor from films such as The Ballad of Buster Scruggs and Seven Psychopaths, both of which, coincidentally, are on Netflix, and both of which Kobe and Helen have discussed here on FlixWatcher.
So make sure you check those episodes out, and when you have a little bit of a taste for the magic that is Tom Waits, why not head over to songbysongpodcast.com or search for Song by Song in your podcatcher of choice to listen to a little bit more about Tom Waits.
Welcome to the FlixWatcher scores. All of our scores are out of 5. You may have decimal places if you wish. And we'll start with you, please, Akim, with your recommendability.
My recommendability would be 4. Because, first of all, it's an amazing story in terms of the camaraderie. Thank you very much of the guys in question. Also, the soundtrack. I love the soundtrack. I mean, you had Terrence Blanchard doing the work in question, but you've got also the Chambers Brothers, you've got Marvin Gaye, all those anthems of the time, which is still relevant today. So top points. Just for that alone, I'd give it 5 out of 5. The characters, amazing. All the four brothers, six of them actually, because you've got Chadwick Boseman, and then you've also got Jonathan Majors' character as well. So I call them the Six Brothers. So I thought they were amazing as well. The only downside to it would have been the action sequences. That was my only criticism of the whole thing. So yeah, 4 out of 5.
Shanti?
I would highly recommend it. So I would also give it 4 out of 5. I'll go with Akin on this one. I probably would have even said 5 out of 5. I think it's one of those films that everybody should watch.
Well, why don't you say 5 out of 5? You can certainly say that.
Let me just say 5 out of 5 then.
Yeah, don't look at me for approval.
Go with your heart.
I'm going with my heart for Delroy Lindo and that astounding performance, and for Chadwick Boseman being absolutely fantastic. I'm giving it 5 out of 5.
Helen?
Yeah. Oh, I was just a little bit disappointed, just because, like, the previous kind of run that Spike Lee had was so good that I was just expecting a little bit more. And I think this had like about 5 writers on it. So maybe that's kind of why it feels, maybe for me, a little bit more disjointed maybe, and a little bit less focused than his other films. But listening to you kind of talk about it with a bit more passion and a reminder that...
You've been swayed by Chadwick Boseman.
Is great in it, and it's kind of like with weird sadness that it's one of his last performances, and we'll kind of always remember him as being like that forever young, and we're kind of remembering the way they remembered him as being their friend.
Yes.
So you've managed to talk me up to a 4, so I'm going to give it a 4. Woo! Even though it's not, that's going to be a bit lower.
It's
but
a win.
You've kind of
we'll take
convinced
it.
Me. That even though it's a bit long and it's a bit uneven, you should still probably watch it. Definitely if you like Spike Lee, even though it's not one of my top ones.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm going to go for 4.3. Definitely watch it. Definitely recommend it to people. There will be caveats. Yeah, I think it could be tightened up a bit. And the fights were almost pastiche. Like when, as I went, Junior jumps on the grenade. Obviously, it's, you know, done with pathos, but also it seemed a bit weirdly unnecessary. So it's, like I say, the fight scenes take it down a notch for me. So I'm getting 4.3. Repeat viewing score. Akeem.
Okay. If I want to have a history lesson and just look at certain references to the film, then I would say 5 out of 5. Definitely watch it. I'd watch it again and again. Personally, I wouldn't watch it within the next 6 or 7 months. But I'll definitely come back again.
I still quite like fast turnaround.
Yeah. Oh, hey, man, I love stuff like that. I mean, just recently I watched The Death of Stalin because it was such a good film. So, yeah.
What's your rating there, sorry?
My rating is 5.
5, okay.
Yeah, he does watch a lot of films many times. I, on the other hand, very rarely do. So in my case, I'd probably give it a 2. I don't know whether I'd see it again unless
How
I really needed
you?
To.
How dare you?
How many times have you each seen it? Have you just seen it the once?
I've seen it just the once back then.
So this is where we've had couples and we've had long-life friends and siblings arguing over, you what? You're giving it what, sorry?
He's just acting for you. It's fine.
No, I'm not acting for you. No.
Helen.
So I am with Ashanti on this one. I'm also going to go for a 2. I saw this at the start of the year, and my brain remembers it because I'm now logging films. So I definitely saw it at the start of this year. And you know what it was? It was the length that put me off rewatching it again. I was like, oh, it's about 2 hours. And then I looked and I was like, 2 hours 34? No. So yeah, the length put me off. So maybe watch it again in a couple of years, possibly. But I didn't rewatch it within the when I saw it in January. So 2.
Yeah, I'm going to go for 3, I reckon, here. I will watch it again. Not sure. I think I watched it for the first time, actually, to my shame, after Chadwick died. And I think the length of it did put me off because I just knew it was going to be deep in there. I didn't think it was going to be particularly light-hearted. So that plus the length didn't, even as much as I love everyone on the screen, it just didn't drive me through it to want to watch it. And then when Chad McDowell was like, dude, you gotta watch it right now. But yeah, I don't think I will watch it so often. I think I'll look to other Spike Lee and other Delroy. I really want to watch Romeo Must Die to see Delroy Lindo in that film, for example. I want to see Delroy in different films. I want to see Isaiah Whitlock and Clark Peters in other films. And I need to see The Last Black Man in San Francisco because
you're managing that. It's fantastic.
It's on my list and just think, I need to watch that. And I think, not today. I've got other things to do and I just need to watch it because I think he's a great future actor as well. You said his name. I can't remember what the actor's name was.
Who?
Delroy Lindo's son in this.
Oh, Jonathan Majors.
Yeah.
He is brilliant. And if you haven't seen The Good Fight, for Delroy Lindo at also his other finest performance, that is one to watch. It's a TV series. It's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, my wife loves that too. Loves that to bits. Small screen score. Akeen.
For this film, I would say watch it at home. This is a watch it at home kind of film because you want to pause. You want to try and look back and see it. Seriously, there are some bits where you say, oh, this is interesting. Go on to Wikipedia and find out the information. If you get to the fight scene, just fast forward with the powerful magic device and just fast forward. So there you go, Helen. Problem solved. Just fast forward.
We call it scrubbing these days, darling.
You call it scrubbing. I call it fast forward. You fast forward. So in terms of screening, I'd watch it on the small screen, not on the big screen.
So that's a 5.
Yeah, 5.
Ashanti, high scores here from Akeem.
Yes, high score from him. For me, I would love to have seen this on the big screen, actually. I had missed, there might have been a screening I wasn't able to go to. And I was a bit gutted because the visuals in this film are absolutely beautiful. And I'm not sure he intended it to be seen on a small screen, because with certain films that are built for the small screen, you'll see a lot of close-ups of the people, et cetera, et cetera. There's lots of little devices that they use to make it very small screen friendly. So a film like this, I wouldn't like to watch on a telephone. Oh my gosh.
Wait,
I
have just regressed. To me, I'm scrubbing.
I know.
You're talking to me about scrubbing, is it?
Just a telephone on a mobile phone. You know, and on a small device, watching this film would feel really odd. So I would prefer to see this on a big screen. But if you have a kind of a 40 to 50 inch television, then yes, I think it works. I don't think it works on even on a 16 inch laptop screen. I don't think it's that great. So I would say 3.
Helen.
Yeah, I think Spike Lee films are warranted a trip to the cinema. And I think had it come out during non-COVID times, I would have gone to the cinema to see it. And I mean, that said, that's all we've got. We've already talked about the soundtrack. I imagine the soundtrack would have been really good in a cinema. And then the kind of out-and-out violence. I wonder if, you know, he's kind of gone for that kind of Rambo over-the-top commando-type violence in that. So he's kind of like taking that from those kind of films and bringing it in. That's kind of the direction it's gone. I don't know. I haven't asked him personally. Hey, Spike, did you take influence from there? So I'm going to go... I don't know why I'm taking so long to decide. I'm going to go 3.5. I think I would have got more enjoyment seeing it on the big screen and it being kind of like quite loud and a bit more in your face, whereas on my TV, I don't know. It, like you said... I don't think he made it with the intention we'd all be sitting at home watching it during a pandemic.
I'm going to go for 3. I think it would have been great to see it in the cinema over watching it for the first time at home. But this, I think that's perhaps lays more into my next score, which would be the engagement score. So I'm going to lead out with you, Akeen.
Once again, it's a story of two halves. The first half, it's more like I'm engaged. I really want to know where this is going. They've got such a brotherly love amongst themselves. It's like, I really want to know what's happening here. There are certain nuances whereby, in the eyes of Paul, anybody he sees as Vietnamese, he can't trust them because as far as he's concerned, they're a gook. And he brings about the whole mentality of Trump supporters, well, you know, the whole outsiders or what have you. So you've got that engagement. It's like, okay, where this is going, where this kind of bond that they have. The second, so that's my engagement, which would be 5 out of 5, no doubt about it. The action sequence, though, I'm going to give it 2 in terms of engagement. So overall, I'd say 3.5.
That maths works out.
Does it? I'm surprised.
The law of averages by Akin.
Shanti?
For me, I would say that I was pretty engaged by most of it. I agree with all of you on the fight sequences. I generally am not a huge fan of fight sequences. So unlike Akin, who would rewind and watch them again and again, if there's something to do with, especially if it's kung fu, actually, that kind of...
I'm sorry. It's sequences. Just when she says she doesn't engage, mention Jason Statham to her. She just goes nuts. She has a crush on Jason Statham. So you were saying, continue.
Statham is... you know, let's not bring him into this. Statham, of course, I will watch everything, including Death Race, and watch everything that he does. That's different. I'm talking about this film, Back to the Five Bloods. And yeah, so for me, engagement-wise, I think I should have been more engaged than I actually was. So I kind of feel like I would give it about 3.5. I think that the length and the fact that the final edit of the film, I still feel was a little bit too long. And that, I think, stopped me from maybe enjoying it the way I would have. But saying all that, I think if I'd seen this at the cinema, my experience would have been very different. And I probably would have given it 4 or 5 because, you know, when you're there, it's just you and that big screen and the sound coming at you from everywhere. So the sound design on this and the music, we could only enjoy to a certain extent from our living room, honestly.
So what's the score, sorry?
3.
Helen?
Yeah, I kind of agree with quite a lot of what Ashanti's just said there. I kind of was with it for the main bits and then kind of got a little bit lost in the middle. And then when they started blowing people up and basically just like shooting the shit out of stuff, I was like, okay, well, that's one way to go. I'm going to go 3.7.
Ooh, yeah, I'm going to go 3. Again, we talked in a few of us, it's a film of 2 halves. And it's, I think it's easy to go dial out once the fighting starts. So 3.7 for Helen, I think 3 for myself. And that gives us an overall score of 3.56250, which I thought was going to be a bit higher than that. But it, I mean, it started off strong with the recommendability.
Yes.
Tailed off towards engagement, which is fine. This is how it works. We have one tweet review. And everyone who's listening, do follow us on Twitter because we always put a shout out on our Twitter feed ahead of a recording and say things like, we're watching The Five Bloods with Ashanti Omkar and Akin Warren. Have you seen it? Tell us your thoughts. And the score out of 5 stars for an on-air shout out on FlixWatcher. So we had one response. Have you got Twitter up?
We've got Kyle A. Goth. Goth? Goth A?
Goth, I guess.
Yes.
I don't know. That might be.
So Kyle and his almighty goat man from Plymouth says, should have been a best picture contender, a brutally honest and multi-layered story about brotherhood in the times of emotional strain. Love this movie. My rating goes up with every rewatch. So his rewatch level is very high and has given an overall score of 4.5 out of 5. And my reply was that Lovely. Delroy Lindo was robbed. And then he replied saying he was happy. This was actually quite witty what he wrote. I'm happy it got the score nod, but I can't believe it didn't, at the very least, score Delroy a nod as well. So I really like the way he wrote that.
So Ashanti, Akin, can you sign up by letting us everyone know where we can find you online? And say goodbye to the listeners.
Sure. Well, I am Ashanti Omkar, A-S-H-A-N-T-I-O-M-K-A-R, everywhere. So you just have to Google that and you'll find me. I'm on Linktree, I'm on Twitter, Instagram, the works. And you get different parts of me on different platforms, basically. Lots of food on Instagram, by the way.
And yourself, sir?
For me, you can find me on Instagram as the Swinging Palm Trees Podcast. And also, if you're into bass and comics, you can find me on Bass and Comics on Instagram.
And on Twitter, you are?
And on Twitter, oh yeah, I completely forgot. On Twitter, I am at Akin Aworan. That's AKINAWORAN. Aworan is a Yoruba word for to see and record things.
Oh, beautiful. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for coming on.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Enjoyed this episode of FlixWatcher Podcast? Why not leave us a 5-star review on iTunes? You can also follow us at FlixWatcherPod on Twitter and we're at FlixWatcher on Instagram. Thanks as always to the mighty people for their mighty, mighty tunes and Ben from Rockwood Audio for his awesome editing skills. If you're looking to get your podcast edited as sweet as this, get in touch with Ben and that's Rockwood, R-O-K-K Wood Audio. Tell them FlixWatcher sent you.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.